Hello and welcome back to Motorsport 360 for another week. Your look around the world of racing. I'm Naveen Razik. Alongside me, it's Joshua Carroll-Walden. We have plenty of things to discuss. We have the first round of the Pertec Enduro Cup. We have the finale of the Verizon IndyCar Series. But we will start off first with Formula One and the first big move of the Formula One silly season. It's been reported by a number of outlets that Carlos Sainz will leave Toro Rosso and join Renault, which will set off a series of events which will allow Renault to supply McLaren engines for 2018. Basically, the way this will work is that McLaren has to incentivize Renault to supply them. So they've managed to make Carlos Sainz move from one side, from Toro Rosso to Renault. As a result, Renault will switch their engine supply deal from Toro Rosso to McLaren, and then Honda, with nowhere else to go, has to supply Toro Rosso for the next season. It's very messy. We're still not sure whether it's all going to go through. It's all still rumoured and the like, but it is certainly the first big play of the silly season, and it's probably the best news McLaren can really have when it comes to trying to get themselves out of the doldrums for next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when earlier this year, when you know they were actually talking about, you know, pretty publicly but not officially, about, you know, wanting to go to a new engine supply next year, Mercedes and Ferrari were basically ruled out straight away. You know, whether that was from McLaren or Ferrari or Mercedes themselves. So this is basically the best thing they can do for the 2018 season. And this, I just feel like this will have a pretty big impact on not just this silly season, but how the grid actually looks for the next 3 odd years. As it's very multi-layered. It's a bit multi-layered, like not as layered as a Fernando Alonso IndyCar experiment in the middle of this year. But, you know, it's layered, and you know, if this is indeed happening simultaneously as to the Sauber to Ferrari B team transition, then we could have, you know, drivers just going everywhere, and you know, some, you know, most notably Pascal Wehrlein feeling the pinch and getting the boot. So yeah, it's very, very layered right now, and you know, realistically, you know, Stoffel Van Dorn, he's a major winner out of this. You know, he'd be, you know, jumping up and down, and you know, just like, you know, just watch him at Singapore this weekend. You know, he'll have a massive smile on his face because of this revelation. Fernando Alonso, you know, as I said, you know, a few weeks ago, the ball is in his court, and he's gonna have to mull this one over, and you know, he might have to accept that you know, the MCL 33 or whatever they want to call the 2018, their 2018 car, you know, it's still unlikely to be a championship challenger. If anything, it's going to be McLaren is just going to basically be in the middle of the void between Red Bull and the rest of the midfield with the Renault engine in the back. So yeah, that's up to him. As you know, realistically, McLaren probably won't be able to, you know, basically to be up there, you know, they won't actually be a championship contender, I feel, until the new engine regulations come in at 2021. So it's up to him, and you know, he's not going to get a seat at Ferrari or Mercedes anytime soon. The general rumor going around is that, you know, Charles Leclerc will replace Kimi Raikkonen. However, there is also the question of Daniel Ricciardo. What's he going to do? Is he potentially going to go over to McLaren soon enough? And if he does, is that going to be a Daniel Ricciardo decision or Red Bull decision? So it's very layered, and it's really going to affect drivers, you know, up and down the field. As yeah, you wouldn't have thought of it, you know, at the start of the year, but yeah, you know, I've given this some thought. Daniel Ricciardo to McLaren, you know, I wouldn't rule it out. I think, you know, that could potentially be a viable option for Daniel pretty soon.
And one of the other big winners, of course, as well, would be Pierre Gasly, who has now said that he might possibly even get a seat at Malaysia should the Sainz deal transfer immediately, and Jolyon Palmer, who we've talked about the bad luck with Jolyon Palmer a lot of this year. If Jolyon Palmer is forced out of Renault and Sainz goes in straight away, then Gasly could be a starter in Malaysia and the like. And this is interesting because around the same time, we get a story about Formula 2, and in particular, the super license system, according to the Formula 2 boss, will be changed to favour it. So we've had Pierre Gasly stuck, I guess, in Super Formula, and the same happened to Stoffel van Dorn. If the FIA are going to try and promote Formula 2 as an option, surely they need to rethink the policy about if you win, you're out. I think we need to have at least a couple of years where guys are able to come back and defend their championship.
Yeah, absolutely. And also as well, it needs to apply to GP3 as well. Just so that, there's no actual, throwing away of, great young talent. And looking at the super license points right now, it is pretty, I think it's pretty fine right now for Formula 2. If you are brand new and you're a rookie and you finish in the top three of the championship, you automatically get enough points to go into F1. And then, even if you're, in Formula 2 for 3 years and finish fifth every single year, you can easily get your super license points up. So I don't really think that it needs changing, really. And when you look at the others that give instant progression into F1, the full 40 points, you've got Formula 3. Yes, I agree that can be turned down to like 35 or 30 for the championship winner. Then Formula E, that's perfectly fine. World Endurance Championship for LMP1 only, that's perfectly fine. IndyCar, that's perfectly fine. World Series Formula V8 by Renault, 3.5 litre category, that's 35. I think that's a little bit too high. GP3, that's a bit too high for 30. Super Formula, that's okay for 25. So realistically, if they need to do anything, they just need to turn Formula E, Formula V8 3.5 and GP3 down by about 5 points, just to make it a general progression. And also as well, this is just a qualm that I've had with super licenses ever since their inception. I don't really see the point of the 18-year-old and over age limit, because if there's a red hot 17-year-old that has to wait around for 12 months to get a gig in F1, who's won Formula 2 championship on his debut, he's won GP3 on his debut, he won Formula 3 on his debut. It just seems like such a waste that he just has to sit around and, just sit at the pit wall for 20 Grand Prix before he can get his chance. So I think they should, if not get rid of, lower the age down to 16 for Formula 1 Drivers' Championship. Like, I don't want to see 16-year-olds, be up and down the F1 grid. I'm just saying that if there is an absolute superstar, like a future Michael Schumacher or a future Ayrton Senna or whatever, and they're 17 and, they've got the world at their fingertips and can easily go into F1 and produce exciting battles, then I think it's a real waste that they have to sit around for 20 Grand Prix before they get their chance.
Some other news coming in, particularly we talked a brief bit about Sauber when we are discussing that opening story. They're planning to increase their workforce by another 100 new staff as they prepare to get themselves back in the Formula One midfield. According to Fred Vasseur, this of course, Sauber of course have been running on year-old engines this year. They will be moving to the current spec next year, as in the 2018 spec in 2018 and the like. On the whole, this seems like good news that they're rehiring in particular, and you suspect that Sauber has really been a team that just hasn't had the facilities and the expenditure put into it that other teams have. They are still the only team, I'm fairly sure, to not have a simulator in-house. So I think this sounds like a good news. Exactly what happens in terms of drivers, we still don't know. Certainly Marcus Ericsson will be next year, but Pascal Wehrlein will probably miss out if the Charles Leclerc move is going to go ahead. But yeah, other than that, it seems like some good moves forward for Sauber. Of course, where they will be against the rest of the Formula One field, which is steadily been moving forward without them, is going to be interesting next year.
It really is. It really is. And just I don't know. I just feel like the talks between Sauber and Ferrari have just sort of, stalled, or if not been put away, because for the past week or so, ever since like Spa, there's just been no real talk about it. And whether or not that's all the talk is being put behind closed doors between Sauber and Ferrari, we just don't know. I just really, fear for Wöhrlein right now, because there's just nowhere for him to go right now. Like, looking down the field, his only option is an outside chance at Williams, but even that's pretty locked down for Massa and Stroll. So yeah, I just don't know what he's going to do, next year, and whether or not, he's actually still on the Mercedes Junior team, because right now he is, on the same. He is still in the junior team, as is Esteban Ocon. But what do Mercedes actually want to do? What will Mercedes do with Wöhrlein if he's squeezed out of the grid? I just don't know. But it is good for stability that Sauber is, rehiring, and continuing to invest in their team, and things are starting to look up for the team again. And realistically, they're the only small team on the grid. The rest are all very big established teams. And even Haas, there's been a few mentions throughout the year that Haas will eventually have the ability to create their own power unit, if the regulations suit them. So yeah, it's good to see the only small team left in F1 starting to turn the tables.
Yeah, that certainly is good news to hear, and we do like to have us small teams still in the competition and the like. So this weekend it's the Singapore Grand Prix. Not surprisingly, very heavy on the purple tyres when it comes to the selections. Every car has got at least seven ultra softs, if not, I think it actually might be eight ultra soft tyres they're taking. Hamilton and Vettel taking two pairs of the softs. Hamilton an extra two super softs, whilst Sebastian Vettel's only got the one super soft. Everybody else on the ultra softs, so that's not particularly surprising. This is a race, of course, that many people will say will favour the Ferraris. I don't really disagree with them, because they have shown in the past that they have got the better chassis for these types of circuits, particularly their dominant form in 2015, where the Mercedes just couldn't lay a finger on them. And I suspect that, much like what happened at Monaco this year, the same thing will happen again at this circuit, and this will probably be the thing that Sebastian Vettel needs to wrestle back the lead of the championship.
For me, it's a really big weekend for Vettel and Ferrari, because if they don't get the result over Hamilton, I just feel like it's going to be very hard to keep up. Like, yes, they could gain have an advantage when they get to Suzuka and possibly Brazil, but apart from that, it's pretty much Mercedes favored circuits remaining. I just feel like Vettel really does need to really pull a big result this weekend, especially after what happened at Monza, just to get the belief back in the team, because I think they really did take quite a battering at Monza with how dominant Mercedes were at the Italian Grand Prix. I just feel like they just need to get one back to just lift the enthusiasm. And if it's a Mercedes 1-2 once again, and Ferrari are just behind them and unable to challenge, then I think just the belief that they can actually win this championship, I think they'll just go straight out the window. So it's a really big weekend for them, and for Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes. If they get this right, if they get the tires right, the tire heating, and the setups, and just all the bad luck that's been, all the everything that's bad, with the speed of the car, if they get all that right for Singapore, then the reward is huge. You've basically broken Ferrari's back if Hamilton and Bottas can lead home in 1-2 once again. That'll be extraordinary for the championship. It'd be huge. And Yeah, I just feel like, ever since, it's been ever since Monaco, Ferrari really dropped off. Like, yes, they did win, and actually get a 1-2 at the Hungaroring, but yeah, that was always going to go their way. They just need some validation that they're there, that they can do this. And while the gap is only 3 points, I just expect, I think it's a well, known, expectation, that the gap will be much, will be pretty, much larger heading into Malaysia, regardless of which way it swings.
Yeah, and it certainly will probably be one of the crucial points in the championship, much like Italy was in terms of swinging them in terms of championship league. This could be the one that really sets the momentum for these flyaway rounds as we head to the end of the Formula One season. Moving back to Australia and to the Supercars Championship, we're back in action at Sandown this week in the first round of the Pirtek Enduro Cup. And this is often where the championship swings. And this race in particular, which has been particularly wild last year, in particular in a wet race, which was won by, of all people, Garth Tander in what was his final win for HRT. They unceremoniously dumped him a few days later. He is now, of course, at Gary Rogers Motorsport and the like. And this is going to be a crucial race, of course, for the two main teams in the championship, DJR and 888 slash Red Bull Holden Racing Team and the like. In the case of 888, we'll start with them and have a look at their drivers. They've got Jamie Whincup and Paul Dumbrella, a nice solid combination. Van Gisbergen and Campbell, the first time that we've seen these guys together, and that's going to be interesting to see how Matt Campbell goes. He is a prestigious young talent, and how he will go with the long game will be very interesting. He has had some pretty solid results in Porsche Super Cup and doing the odd race with Nissan. I think he competed last year with Nissan. So, yes, very interesting to see how we go and how he will replace Alex Prema, who was, of course, very influential in the form of that number 97 car last year. And of course, Craig Lowndes with Stephen Richards as well and rocking the old classic Holden livery. They should be pretty solid, but again, some slight question marks on how Van Gisbergen and Campbell will go. I expect to go will go very well. But you never know. If there is one thing though, for sure, I think Shane is perfectly happy with going with different driver pairings, and I think that they will gel well nicely, and I think they'll be up there certainly this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone, up and down the international motorsport paddock, rates Matt Campbell very, very highly. He's a future, future superstar in Europe. In 5 to 10 years, everyone's going to know who Matt Campbell is. And I think, he will complement Shane Van Gisbergen and, just the way, he operates. So I think, Car 97 is going to be, very strong this Enduro Cup season. It's just the question mark over the actual distance of the races, as he hasn't really done any long distance races except for the Bathurst 12-hour. So, that's good. But yeah, there's still just a question mark of how he will cope up at the front. And Whincup and Dumbrell, they've been together for a long, long time. A lot of Enduro Cup races they've been together now, and you just can't fault PD. He'll bring the car home in one piece, without a doubt, to Whincup, and all Jamie needs to do is convert. And then Craig Lowndes and Stephen Richards in the third car for Team Vortex, another very, very solid pairing. And just on the whole, all round, just a very, very well-rounded, well-thought-out lineup and just operation heading into the Enduro Cup for Red Bull. And they're set to have another very, very strong Endurance Cup campaign. And and there's and it's pretty likely that they'll be in the hunt for the Enduro Cup crown.
Yeah, certainly. Of course, their chief competitors will be DJR, Team Penske, Fabian Coulthard, teaming up with Tony Dalberto in the number 12 car. Dalberto, of course, was with Scott Pye last year and had a pretty solid result. Scott McLaughlin reunites with Alex Prema, who, of course, he drove with, I think, in his Volvo days, back with him for this year. Very, very strong results, admittedly somewhat hampered by reliability and the like in the Volvo era. However, he has got probably the best car, McLaughlin and Prema. They've both got the best car they've ever had, I guess, in their careers. And certainly, this would be the year where they break their hoodoos at Bathurst and the like. And I think we can expect them to be very strong at Sandown, particularly McLaughlin, who, of course, has had all the momentum coming into this round.
Yeah, absolutely. I expect DJI Team Penske to be extremely strong at Sandown with just how fast that FDX Shell Falcon is in a straight line. They really do deserve to, take out the Enduro Cup and then for Scotty to take out the championship. However, there are no guarantees and there's no prize for being, the most deserving. It's all about getting to the checkered flag first. I really do rate Car 17. Car 17 is my pick for the weekend. Prema, he's been very, very good as a co-driver, being pretty faultless. Ever since he first took up the co-driver role, and he's similar to Paul Dumbrell. He will be pretty fast and just give the car back to McLaughlin. And on the other side of the garage, car 12, Tony D'Alberto, probably the weakest out of the five that we've talked about, but still a very, very solid driver with a lot of Supercar experience. And Fabian Coulthard, just once again, this is one of his best ever chances to take out an unexpected Bathurst 1000 victory. His form hasn't been amazing, but he's been able to pick up the scraps, most notably at Sydney Motorsport Park. So if things go a little crazy at Bathurst, then you certainly can't count out Fabian Coulthard and Tony D'Alberto, because they're two guys with two very cool heads, and that they just never get really that caught up in all the chaos and drama. They just keep their head down and keep powering through it. So if the race is turned on its head, you just cannot count out car 12.
Yeah, that's certainly the way we're going to be expecting things to go. It's going to be a very close fight between those two top teams. I'll just run through the other Enduro drivers, and I guess I'll ask you, Josh, to name some of your people to watch, cars to watch, and the like. So at Techno, Will Davison, probably with Jono Webb. I don't think we still actually got confirmation of that, but that it should be set in stone.
It's most likely. It's most likely.
Yeah, a bit.
I think Will Davison basically said, yeah, it's going to happen.
Yeah, so we'll take that as a certainty at this point. Looking at Pro Drive, we have Mark Winterbottom and Dean Canto in the number five card. That's a pretty solid pairing from last year. They didn't have the greatest of results at Bathurst and the like. Cam Waters, Richie Stannaway in the number six. A good, promising young duo there. Chas Mostert with Steve Owen. That's a very solid pairing. Of course, it'll be interesting to see how Mostert goes. He's had a bit better form this year. He might possibly feature in, although he still didn't have a great one at Bathurst last year. And of course, less said about the year before, the better. And in the number 56 Mega Racing entry, Jason Bright and Gary Jacobson all go together. At Walkinshaw, it's business as usual. Scott Pye will be replacing Garth Tando, and we'll be pairing up with Warren Luff, and James Courtney and Jack Perkins will go together again. That's a very solid combination. And this will be a week. These are the weekends where HSV do manage to fall something out of the bag. Usually these sort of enduros, they do tend to run a bit better at Brad Jones Racing, Nick Purkett, Macaulay Jones, very capable combo. Tim Slade and Ash Walsh, Tim Blanchard, Todd Hazelwood, lots of young talent in there. Lee Holdsworth and Carl Reindler again in the number 18 Preston Hire entry. At Nissan, it's pretty much business as usual. Todd Kelly, Jack LeBrock, Rick Kelly, David Wall, Caruso Fiore, which is of course a very strong combo, and Simone Di Silvestro, who will be partnering with David Russell, not Renee Gracie, who I think is winding down her Dunlop Super 2 duties. At Gary Rogers Motorsport, it'll be Garth Tander and James Golding, who will go together. James Moffat and Richard Muscat. So those are two interesting new combinations in there. And of course, Lucas Dumbrell Motorsport, Aaron Russell and Taz Douglas, Alex Rullo and Alex Davidson, and Erebus Motorsport, David Reynolds and Luke Yulden, Dale Wood and Chris Pither in the number 99. So Josh, out of those, pretty solid feel, a couple of untested combinations in there. Who would be your sort of wild cards, people to watch this in campaign at the Sandown 500?
Well, instantly my eyes draw towards car six of Cameron Waters and Richie Stanaway. It's been well documented how good Stanaway is. You know, he was actually in a GP3 and in a GP, he was in GP2, you know, only a couple of years ago. So he's got the car speed for sure. And he was extremely impressive in the Superbike entry last year. So now he's, you know, in one of the flagship cars with Cameron Waters, who has been, pretty impressive. And, you know, those guys, you know, can be pretty capable of podiums. And, you know, when you actually look at Cameron Waters' form guide, you can actually see that, you know, for the longer races, not the sprint races, his form is a little bit better. Yeah, you know, most notably, you know, he got fourth in the first race at Clipsal this year. So they're definitely one for a podium. Chas Mosser and Steve Owen, you know, you can't go past that pairing. They'll be definitely ones to watch for, in terms of the category of cars just going for the Enduro Cup and not really giving a damn about the championship itself. So they'll be a pairing. They'll be really going hard for the three rounds. Also, as well, just looking through the rest of the field. Car 9, Dave Reynolds, Luke Yulden. Luke Yulden, you know, a very solid co-driver, you know, never bends it, you know, doesn't take unnecessary risks. And Dave Reynolds, you know, super fast. And Car 9 just in general is, you know, very, very quick, you know, has been for most of this year, and, you know, definitely is one to keep an eye on. And, you know, they'll be very deserving winners if they come out and take a race win at any point of the endurance season. And looking through the rest of the field, you know, it's looking like a very intense, midfield. And just one more car to keep an eye on. Tim Slade, Nash Walsh, both of those guys, you know, very experienced. You know, Brad Jones Racing itself, you know, absolute, you know, they really do step up when it comes to enduro time. And Tim Slade has been, you know, pretty impressive and also flying under the radar so far this season. And and one last thing, you know, Ash Walsh, you know, he's basically done it all without the actual recognition of doing it all. So this year coming will be his fifth Bathurst 1000. He had a finish of seventh with Tim Slade once again last year. So those guys have finished in the top 10 at Bathurst before, and I fully expect him to be up there again. You know, just a question mark of whether or not Brad Jones Racing can actually nail the setup heading into these four very intense races. But on the whole, you know, it's a very, very intense and going to be a very hard fought, few races. It's so competitive that you'd be patting yourself on the back if you got a top 20 finish, especially if you're someone like Alex Rullo and Alex Davison, Team Alex in the 62 car. So, yeah, they're my dark horses to watch, and definitely a lot of attention will be on DJR Team Penske and Triple Eight, but don't be surprised if someone else, you know, even, you know, Will Davison and Jonathan Webb, you know, don't be surprised if, you know, someone else comes up and spoils the party for the big five.
Yeah, certainly, and that could happen because this weekend we have about an 80% chance of rain on the Saturday, which is, of course, the day of the crew qualifying races. And when rain hits at Sandown, it all goes off. So certainly it's going to be a very, very interesting weekend. Also, there's plenty of action across the whole weekend, and on Monday morning, the Verizon IndyCar Series comes to a close at Sonoma Raceway, and it couldn't be any closer if you tried. Joseph Newgarden and Scott Dixon, only a couple of points between them heading into the final race. The Chevys and the Penskes will be strong, of course, at Sonoma, but you just can't count out Scott Dixon, who has great form at this track, and has great form just in general, and really has proven to be one of the great IndyCar drivers. If he's able to pull it off, it will certainly put him as one of the greatest New Zealand race drivers, never mind one of the greatest open wheelers in America. And if Joseph Newgarden is able to pull it off, it will be an astonishing victory and an astonishing championship win in his first season with Team Penske, and it will certainly be a fantastic boost for IndyCar in America.
It really will be, but, you know, they're just, you know, two very possible scenarios right now. And, yeah, just hanging in, I just feel like Scott Dixon's just got a slight edge over Newgarden. You know, Newgarden's best finish at Sonoma is sixth place, and he achieved that last year and also in 2014. So, you know, it's certainly not a bogey track for Newgarden. But, you know, just hanging up against Scott Dixon, who, you know, is one of the most successful IndyCar drivers to, you know, in terms of actual race wins at Sonoma, you know, it's, you know, a very, very tall order. But, you know, with Penske behind them, you know, you can never count him out. So, yeah, it's difficult. And, you know, he definitely was fast before, unfortunately, he went into the wall at the exit of pit lane at Watkins Glen. He certainly was up there, so there's no reason why he can't be up there once again. Like, you know, it's surprising when you actually look and see that, you know, all his race wins, you know, apart from Gateway, have been on the road courses. So, you know, he's definitely got the speed, and he's definitely got, you know, the right frame of mind. You know, he's just got to pull it off against Scott Dixon. So, and that's a major obstacle in the way. And then, you know, you can't count out Castroneves or Pagano, you know, who can, you know, still mathematically and pretty comfortably mathematically take out the championship as they could, you know, sprint a surprise. As, you know, it wasn't that long ago that in 2015, I think it was, where Juan Pablo Montoya, you know, was a favourite, you know, basically all season to take out the IndyCar title. And it came to the last race, and Scott Dixon, through double points, clinched the championship at the death. So, and it wasn't by much either. So, yeah, it's still, you know, the main battle line is between Newgarden and Dixon. But, you know, don't rule out Castroneves and Pagano for this championship. Like, they don't really have the form, but they've got, you know, the right team, the right car speed. They just need a little bit of luck to go their way. And, you know, when you just think of Dixon and Newgarden, neither of those two have really made any sort of mistakes this year. You know, the only mistake those two have made, you know, was Newgarden, unfortunately, going into the wall at Watkins Glen. The rest of it, you know, Texas, you know, that was just a freak race. That was a complete, you know, farce. You know, in Indianapolis, you know, neither of them, you know, Newgarden just didn't have the speed, you know, from the Chevrolet package. Dixon, you know, just had a freak crash. So, yeah, a mistake from either of those two, let alone both of those two in the one race, is very unlikely. However, there is still the possibility of it happening. So, yeah, I just feel that this title is going to go to Dixon. But you know, you just can't rule out Newgarden or any other Penske car with Castroneves or Pagano. It's definitely going to be a very open and hard-fought championship.
Yeah, and if you look at the point scenarios at the moment, basically all Scott Dixon and Joseph Newgarden do is to win and then basically finish ahead of each other. When it comes to Helio Castroneves, he can win his first career IndyCar championship and possibly the last championship he'll compete in, if rumours that he might switch to IMSA are to be believed. He needs to finish first and have Joseph Newgarden finish by at least third for him to secure the championship and the like. So it is still very possible for Castroneves if he's able to wedge himself in front of them and get somebody behind him. He still certainly shouldn't be counted out. Pagenaud has got longer odds. He needs to make sure that everybody else finishes off the podium for him to secure a win. That will be quite difficult given just how competitive the others are. Willpower, very long odds indeed. He needs everybody to finish out of the... He needs Josh Newgarden and Scott Dixon to finish out of the top 10 and the others to finish off the podium and him to win, which is, of course, very long odds. And, of course, probably the furthest away, Alexander Rossi, who has to have, for him to win, Joseph Newgarden not to even compete and get any points at all, or to be disqualified and other ridiculous scenarios. It's basically near impossible for them to come in. So, yeah, personally, I do think it will just go to Scott Dixon. He's just got a bit more experience here. And Joseph Newgarden has never really been in a championship fight like this, and his mistake at Watkins Glen was quite telling. But then again, you never know. And certainly at Sonoma, a track where overtaking is difficult, and you do get random interferences. Last year, Power, unlucky. Engine went. A year before, we had some shenanigans with the Penske's at the back of the field, and that ultimately meant Montoya played the wrong card in the like. It is still a very tricky championship. So yes, it will now all kick off on Monday morning at a decent time slot as well, because we are racing in the west of the United States. That'll be very exciting, and I look forward to some live IndyCar action. Let's move to the other major series in the United States, NASCAR, which wraps up the regular season with a win for Kyle Larson at Richmond. He had a pretty solid run. Another chaotic finish in overtime. His major teammate, major contender, sorry, for the championship, Martin Truex Jr., going out in a blaze of glory during the overtime segment. And of course, Joey Logano, despite running in the top five at stages in the race, just wasn't in the place to make it into the championship. So his particular campaign ends there, which means we now head off into the first prop of this new format of NASCAR playoffs. Basically, the way it works is that the drivers will have built up points and effectively got themselves a head start during the regular season, heading into these playoffs where the points effectively reset. I think they're all set to 2,000 points, which is well clear. At the lead of that is Martin Truex Jr. Following him is Kyle Larson. There's 20 points between them. Then Kyle Busch, Keselowski, Johnson, Harvick, Hamlin, Stenhouse, Blaney, Elliott, Newman, Busch, Kurt Busch, Kasey Kahne, Austin Dillon, Matt Kenseth, and Jamie McMurray, who squeezes in to that 2,000 point marker. And they head off next to Chicagoland. Josh, how do you think this is going to play out? The first time we've seen this system, where aside from the eliminations, it's going to play out effectively like a traditional season. Just everybody's effectively where they were in the standings beforehand. It is going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
It will be, and just something I've seen actually. Martin Truex Jr. is a full race points worth ahead of the round of 12 cutoff of Kyle Busch on as he's on 2,053 points. And Kurt Busch is on 2,005 points. That just shows how impressive he's been throughout the regular season. So, yeah, I think with all the shenanigans aside in terms of the new points and stages, I think this is just going to play out just like a normal chase for the Monster Energy Cup Series Championship Final 10 races, as, you know, we're now familiar with the round of 16, round 12, round 8, round of 4 for the championship round at Homestead. You know, we're familiar with that. And I think, you know, that's just easy to overthink it, as it's really not that different to what we've seen in the past. So, as, you know, the be-all and end-all is a race win. If you are someone like Jamie McMurray, who doesn't want to get in on points to the round of 12, you know, if he wins at Chicagoland, he goes straight through to the round of 12. So, yeah, it's I think, you know, it's just going to be more the same, realistically. And heading into Chicagoland, a track that is, sort of, a bit like, just your standard, 1.5 mile oval. It certainly can catch you out as, it's a bit of a, it's a bit of an unknown, as everyone only goes there once a year, and it's just a little bit different from everything else. So on the whole, you have to say, the regular contenders will be up there once again. But for the first time this season, the spotlight will definitely be on the guys that are currently 7th to 16th. So that's Hamlin, Stenhouse, Blaney, Elliott, Newman, Kurt Busch, Austin Dillon, Casey Kane, Matt Kenseth, Tim McMurray. They're going to be the real focus of this weekend, and for the first time this season, as all the most of those guys have been basically safe in the chase since early on. So yeah, this is the part of the season where it really is crunch time, and this is the part of the season where tempers can really go off. So on the whole, everyone will be chasing for that win this weekend. And then, as every weekend goes by, the pressure builds, and it builds and it builds and it builds until there's the cutoff point after Dover, and then it builds again until after Kansas, and then it builds again until after Phoenix. And then Homestead is just on a completely different level. So yeah, it's open. Truex Jr. has the advantage, but it's still, there's still so many, obstacles to navigate. It's definitely going to be a very hard fought, and a very, I wouldn't say bitter, but a very hot 10 mile races of the season.
Yeah, it's going to be another close run. We've got a couple of these close runs. I mean, all of the championships actually look pretty close, and none can be more closer at the moment than MotoGP. The San Marino Grand Prix was, of course, a couple of days ago, a close race between Danilo Petrucci and Marc Marquez, who just took the race with a pass in the dying few laps, and that now puts both him and Andre Dovizioso level with 5 races to go. Dovizioso says that the race is completely open because he doesn't believe any of the tracks will favour either Honda or Ducati, and it certainly does look like it will go down to the wire. It's just been it's going to be a great run, and in particular from drivers who not we don't expect. It's not going to be a Rossi Lorenzo story this time. It's going to be Marc Marquez driving up against somebody different, and Maverick Vinales still in the championship hunt, 16 points behind. He could still spring an upset for Yamaha. A three-way fight is certainly what MotoGP needs, and I think it's going to cap off a very good season when we head off to Aragon next.
Yeah, it really will. It really will. And San Marino was definitely, a really big weekend. It was where the championship battle went from 5 to 3, as Pedrosa had an absolute shocker of a weekend, and he's now 49 points off, with only 5 races to go. So he's pretty much out of the real championship fight. And it really is really refreshing to see Dovizioso and Vinales taking it up to Marquez for the championship fight, as you certainly would have predicted this, let alone 12 months ago. So it really is, got to be, extremely unpredictable to see who actually takes the championship at Valencia. It will definitely go, almost certainly go down to Valencia. It's just very likely going to be decided there. And I can't really stress the race at Aragon in 2 weekends' time enough, as we've spoken before about the flyaway races, how they favor the momentum. And then when you get back to Valencia, if you want to just come back from behind, it's basically too late. So yeah, it's going to be a real crucial weekend. If Marquez can win, he's going to be the favorite, and clearly, if Vinales can win, it's going to be a three-way, very open championship fight. And if Dovizioso can take it, it's still going to be pretty open. So it really is all to play for the top three of of Marquez, Dovizioso, and Vinales, as any one of those three riders can win the championship. It's just about, who actually will win the championship this season, as definitely Marquez and Dovizioso are starting to form a bit of a checkerboard in terms of form. In terms of Marquez, getting the better of Dovizioso one week, and then Dovizioso turning it around, and then Marquez, just quietly collecting points behind them, still in with a real pretty good shot. So it really is, going to come down to the wire, and I just get the feeling that this championship fight between the top three will be fantastic to watch.
Yeah, it certainly looks like it will be another thrilling end to the season in MotoGP, the championship that just keeps on giving. So we're pretty much wrapping up the end of the show. Also in action this weekend, WEC returns for the 6 hours of the Circuit of the Americas, which will be the last race there for the foreseeable future. We don't know about where they're going to be after the next season ends all the way in 2019. There's a good chance they'll be replaced by Sebring, which is what is going to happen next season. Also, of course, in action, we have Formula One at Singapore in Marina Bay, another great race weekend, and it's set to be, of course, an important weekend for Ferrari. They need to win here to have any chance of keeping their championship fight with Sebastian Vettel alive. We also have the Sandown 500, the first leg of the Pertec Enduro Cup, the lead into the Bathurst 1000, and a crucial race for anybody who is wanting to make an impact in the championship this season. The IndyCar wraps up as well on Monday morning as well, and NASCAR at Chicagoland set to be another great way to kick off the playoffs. It certainly looks like it'll be an exciting weekend. We'll be wrapping it all up next week and looking forward to all the other and reviewing all the big stories that come out of the weekend. Until then, I've been Naveen Razik.
And I've been Josh Carroll.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.